In episode one of this series, we left Clare on the Friday night before this All-Ireland semi-final against Offaly. Colin Lynch was suspended after the battles of the Munster final, so was their hero fullback Brian Lohan. Gerlach Nann, their manager, was confined to the stand in Croke Park as punishment for breaching the matchday regulations. And after Loch Nann had rallied the Clare nation to his side that week in his interview on Clare FM, the sense of outrage and defiance in Clare was beyond palpable. In the run-up to the game, Clare even retired Lohan's number 3 jersey. The authorities in Croke Park were also told Clare wouldn't release the correct team to be announced over the public address system if Loch Nann wasn't allowed mingle with the players on the field beforehand. Years later, the players remembered him coming onto the field and the cameras flashing. In my experience of Gaelic games, Loch Nann said in his autobiography in 2001, I've never seen a team as united with its supporters as that first day against Offaly. When we came onto the pitch, there was just an electric feeling and a great ovation. It was an incredible feeling of oneness with the crowd. And considering at that stage, we had already won 2 All-Irelands, it was just incredible. Loch Nann also ensured a certain type of oneness with his management team on the day, taking his place in the stand alongside Lynch and Lohan beside the Clare dugout, so close that his selectors Tony Considine and Mike McNamara could literally turn around for a chat. For Offaly, they couldn't possibly know what was coming from them. Not the players, not Michael Bond, nobody. In his Sunday Times column that morning, Babs Keating laid it all out. Johnny Pilkington hadn't played a good match all year. Darren Hanafy, named at centre field, wasn't a centre fielder. John Troy's best position for Offaly was indeed centre forward where he was selected, but not in 1998. Keating had counted 5 Offaly forwards being shifted in the first 20 minutes against Antrim, trying to find some combination that might work. Their defence was good, he said, but Clare wouldn't miss Lohan or Lynch this time. But Offaly had their own motivations. On the face of it, there seemed enough in Clare's favour to win. They had the energy channelled by Loch Nann in the past week racing through them. And even if the team was weakened by their losses, they now had a cause to rally around. And what to expect from Offaly, who knew? And that's what gave this All-Ireland semi-final its magic. And why it would conjure a set of games that wouldn't just offer a dramatic hurling season its most crucial plot twist, but also give matches destined to be remembered for all time. So join us as we revisit the manic All-Ireland hurling semi-final between Clare and Offaly in episode 4 of the summer of 98. While Clare's victory in the 1995 All-Ireland Final was celebrated among the greatest breakthrough titles ever won by any county, the devastation in Offaly as the losing team was severe. They were going for 2 in a row in 1995. Johnny Pilkington was captain that year, and when someone remarked to him years later that he had never really gotten over that defeat, he found it hard to disagree. In the week before the 1998 game, the Offaly selector, Pat McLaughney, was happy to sprinkle some more fuel on that fire. He recalled the league game that spring on Easter Saturday. Offaly were on the field at 6 p.m, waiting for Clare, who didn't emerge till nearly 20 past. It was just the way they tried to psych out teams, McLaughney said. It wouldn't unsettle us. We'd use it as motivation for ourselves. Offaly also remembered how Clare celebrated beating Offaly that evening. It really meant something to them. We've a few crows to pluck with them, McLaughney said. But what transpired in Croke Park that afternoon still stunned everyone. Clare were flat. So flat, they needed a free from James O'Connor to scramble a draw at the very end, 1-13 apiece, despite Clare having led by 4 points with 8 minutes left. But a huge performance from Brian Whelan had kept Offaly alive. Davy Fitzgerald, the Clare goalkeeper, had made a great save from Johnny Dooley, but also saw a penalty of his own saved by Whelan. Then, with 7 minutes left, Fitzgerald batted away a free from Johnny Dooley, which was whipped to the net by Johnny Pilkington. when Pilkington hit another point with a couple of minutes left, Clare were down and almost out, only for Jamesy to save them. Afterwards, Lochnane stood in the dressing room in front of the waiting media, stripped to the waist, and spoke, even if he looked a little more reluctant than usual. His remarks captured something of the flatness of Clare's performance. "It was like being a spectator at the game," he said of being in the stand, "not like being part of the team. Just the helplessness of sitting there at the side." But as the conversation turned to the impact of the previous week spent defending Colin Lynch and everything that came with that, Lochnane warmed again to his work. "After all the demonisation and character assassination of the Clare team and management, we went out there and nobody can say that we didn't behave honourably," he said. "I would die for any of those fellas out there," Lochnane said, now in full flow, "and they would do the same for me. Maybe I go over the top, I'll admit that hopefully to anybody sometime or other, but it's all for the players who give everything to Clare, and any of us who go out give it our absolute best, and since 1995 we have been involved in one fracas, a 3-minute fracas which both sides were responsible for. We seemed to take all the responsibility and blame for it. That was wrong." But there was a colder flip side to all that fire. Sitting nearby with a huge ice pack strapped to his leg, Jamesy O'Connor responded slightly differently to inquiries over whether the previous week had actually taken too much out of Clare. "It had an unsettling effect," he said. "Every person you met wanted to talk about it. It's very hard when it's constantly around you to just ignore it. It had an unsettling effect on me. A few of the lads were bitter about what was written about a couple of the guys and how Colin Lynch in particular was treated. That does get to you. But it's over now, though." In the Offaly dressing room, it was starting to feel like this was only the beginning. "I am very disappointed," said Michael Bond. "I think we should have won. I think we were the better team on the day. I predicted it would be a low-scoring game, and I was right. Anybody who wanted to listen to me knew from me that this Offaly team was as good as any around. I'm not always right, but I'm never wrong." Before the replay began, a multi-denominational service was also held at Croke Park and a minute's silence in memory of the victims of the Oma bomb blast that had occurred 7 days before on August 15th. When the match started, Clare thundered from the blocks this time. Alan Markham plundered a goal and 2 points from Brian Whelan in a half an hour, and Clare had Offaly pinned down all over the field. They led 1-9 to 4 points at halftime, with goal chances galore, and Offaly needing to restructure radically for the second half. But 2 goals in 5 minutes bounced Offaly back off the ropes and back into the game. First, Billy Dooley cracked a goal, then Joe Errity was brought down for a penalty that he converted himself. But Clare still seemed to manage the crisis. They were a goal up with time running down and Barry Murphy attacking Offaly on their own 20-metre line. Then, the final whistle blew. Everybody looked at referee Jimmy Cooney. Brian Whelan had only just asked the linesman how long was left and was told 4, maybe 5 minutes. Michael Bond was standing beside Ger Lochnane and showed him his stopwatch. It read 33 minutes, 20 seconds. The referee had blown the game up too early. What followed was one of the most chaotic, dramatic, and controversial hours seen at Croke Park in its entire history. As the crowd invaded the pitch, security staff immediately made for Cooney to get him off the pitch. Both his linesmen were with him, carrying the same message: "You got the time wrong." His initial reaction was to try and restart the game, but it was too late. Before he knew it, Cooney had been ushered into the referee's dressing room, the players were gone, and the crowd had thronged the pitch. The Offaly dressing room was a cauldron of opinions and bad feeling. "It's a disgrace," said Michael Deignan. "Ger Lochnane was going on about fairness and human rights after Colin Lynch was suspended, but I think if he wants to live by that today, he should offer us a replay." Michael Bond seemed up for the fight, but less than sure of the outcome. "I bet £100,000 to a halfpenny we won't get a replay," he said. "People who seem to be in the know said to me, you'll get an apology. I don't know who they were. People don't know me and I don't know people. We had a quick meeting in here and we're going down whatever avenue. All we want is justice. I was in the Offaly dressing room that evening after the game. I can remember Brian Whelan incensed and speaking at the top of his voice to anyone who could hear him. I can also still see the Offaly selector Podge Mulhare, a veteran of Offaly's greatest days over the previous four decades, whom I had interviewed that summer, winking at me in the middle of all the mayhem. "It'll be all right," he smiled. Down the hall in the Clare dressing room, they knew exactly where this outcome placed them now. "It leaves it a little bit flat for us," said Fergie Toohey. "The way things are going against us, it would have been flat anyway. We're public enemy number one." Brian Lohan was nearby, blood trickling down his neck from a cut. "Will it go to a replay?" he was asked. He looked up at the reporters. "Ye make the decisions around here, boys." As far as Loughnane was concerned, there was no way back. "The referee's decision is final," he said. "What can you do?
You just have to take it."
Afterwards, the Clare and Offaly players drifted upstairs in Croke Park for a drink. As they looked out over the pitch, around 2,000 Offaly supporters were still camped there in protest. As he took in the scene, Johnny Pilkington turned to Clare's captain, Anthony Daly. "Wouldn't you think they'd go away for an old drink?" he said. The last of the supporters didn't leave till 6:30, 90 minutes after the game had ended. Out on the pitch, the Kildare under-21 hurlers were pucking about behind the goals at the canal end of the ground, still hoping their All-Ireland B final against Kerry might go ahead. When it was confirmed the game was called off, the remaining 100 or so people who had stayed in Croke Park for the game booed the decision. Elsewhere, in the referee's dressing room, Jimmy Cooney was being held back for his own safety. "We spent hours in that dressing room," he said in an interview in August 1999 for the television show Sport Irish. "Lonesome hours. I thought the night would never end." They were eventually let go at around 9:50pm that night. A couple of days later, Cooney shared his feelings in an interview on RTE and in the newspapers. "It has been fairly hard, all right," was his description of the previous 48 hours. "It's been a difficult time. I'm just sorry this happened. If an apology at this stage is any good to anybody, that's what I'll do. I thought I'd played out the time, but obviously I didn't. I was 5 minutes short. I'm totally sorry." He recalled his two linesmen telling him of his error and his own immediate reaction to try and restart the game. But it was too late. "A lot was going on at the time," he said. "Different people were saying different things. I didn't know if the players had left the pitch. To be honest, I didn't know what to do at that stage. I actually didn't know what to do." From the dressing room, he had heard the booing and the shouting from the field. "It was frightening," he said. "It's not easy frightening me, but I was a bit scared. I was a bit concerned for my family. I was afraid the kids might get nasty phone calls. That was a real worry." Eventually, with darkness descending over Croke Park, Cooney was also asked to submit his referee's report. He sat down and filed his thoughts. Some years later, Cooney completed the picture about what had happened that day in Jim O'Sullivan's book, Men in Black. At one point in the game, Cooney had booked two players and gotten drawn away to an off-the-ball incident before he restarted the game. But in his haste to get going, he forgot to restart his watch. Having noticed this, he reverted to his backup watch and estimated 3 minutes of injury time would be about right. But his backup watch was set for 30 minutes. In effect, Cooney had blown up about 5 minutes early. That night, he wrote in his report that he had, quote, erred in terminating the game. He asked to be excused from duties if a replay was ordered. That evening, Offaly gathered in Lucan for a meeting. Michael Bond wanted them to train the following day, just in case. And some players wanted to train, others wanted to wait. And the mood was sour. While Loughnane and Clare County Secretary Pat Fitzgerald went back to Croke Park on Sunday to a GAA Games Administration Committee meeting about the possibility of a refixture, Mike McNamara took the players for a training session and ran the legs off them. The mood going home was grim. But the rematch was confirmed that afternoon for the following Saturday in Thurles at 3:30 p.m. Clare accepted the replay without objection and sought to appeal Colin Lynch's suspension to the GAA's Management Committee, their highest executive body. When it was rejected, Loughnane made another appearance on Clare FM, appalled that Clare's acceptance of a rematch hadn't somehow softened hearts towards their appeal, and convinced now that the GAA itself had it in for Clare. "There is no doubt about it," he said. "No point in denying it, that the powers that be in the GAA do not want Clare to win this All-Ireland. You can take that for certain. Everything will be done to stop us from winning on Saturday, and if we get farther than that, and the only way we can do it is by concentrating on the ball on the field." He turned to a series of heavy challenges from Offaly that had gone unpunished in the replay, particularly one challenge by Michael Deignan on Clare's David Ford that left Deignan lucky to avoid a red card. "Who was at fault for failing to highlight those?" "The media," Loughnane said. "I think they behaved disgracefully after the Munster final, and they bear a huge responsibility for the position Colin Lynch is in now. Why haven't they behaved in a similar way when worse actions than anything that happened in the Munster final happened? They have to answer that. It's they who have the guilty conscience. We have no guilty conscience. We have behaved with honour on all occasions, and that is why we can look ourselves in the face and say we have nothing to be ashamed of. There is a certain section which is following a totally different agenda, and the agenda is to bring down Clare at all costs." When the Clare hurlers arrived in their dressing room in Thurles the following Saturday, they saw a picture of Deignan stuck onto the wall. It stoked the fires, but generating that spark was getting harder. When the team stopped in Cashel on the way to Thurles, Loughnane recalls in his autobiography his selector Tony Considine remarking how tired he felt. Loughnane was stunned. Considine, a fountain of enthusiasm, never felt tired. But Loughnane knew the mood wasn't right. In Offaly, the mood had swung fully around. Their training sessions were now drawing crowds of over 1,500 people, and a gigantic crowd followed them to Thurles. When the match started, Offaly had once again shuffled about their entire front eight, trying to get their forward line to spark. But this time it worked. Joe Dooley was outstanding. Hubert Rigney and Brian Whelihan dominated in defence, while Clare looked worn out. Clare still only trailed by 3 points at half-time, but Loughnane knew the end was coming dangerously close. "They were all exhausted," he said in his book. "We were facing demolition." His response was to approach his centre fielder Ollie Baker, flattened on the treatment table. Baker was coming off, or so everyone thought. Instead, Loughnane rose him up like Lazarus. "Do you realise what state we're in?" he shouted. "There's a war on here!" Baker went out and delivered a marvellous performance, but it wasn't enough. Clare only led for a single minute of the entire match, but still Offaly needed Stephen Byrne to make some magnificent saves. But they won, 16 points to 13. Afterwards, the Offaly players crammed into the dressing room, followed by the usual gaggle of reporters, myself included. I remember a couple of them disappearing into the showers for a smoke. The others were high as kites. When Ger Loughnane arrived in to offer his congratulations, the room went silent. "I'm here to congratulate you on behalf of every hurling person in Clare for your tremendous display today," he said. "If we were to be beaten by anyone, we would wish it to be Offaly, because it was you who set the example for all of us, and to be beaten by you in an epic game like today is no disgrace for us." The message for his own players when he went back to their dressing room reflected how deeply 1998 would always go with Loughnane. "In years to come," he said, "you'll look back on this as a brilliant year. There are a lot of lessons that can be learned about life, about trust and the way people behave. I'm prouder of you today than on the day you won your first All-Ireland." Down the years, Loughnane and his management always said they never regretted any of it. But some of the players wondered. Others reckoned they were never going to get a fair crack. Worst of all, the players wondered how it might affect Clare's legacy. "I think it pissed off some of the players that we were portrayed as a dirty team," said James O'Connor in Hurling the Revolution years.
We were a hard physical team. We were aggressive, but we needed to be that way. And if we weren't playing that way, we wouldn't have achieved anything like what we did achieve. To Loughnane, for all its crises and the sense that remains ever since that Clare were derailed from a very winnable All-Ireland, 1998 remained one of his team's defining years. Not in terms of trophies, but in terms of the Clare he wished to build for the future. Mentally strong, unflinching in battle, united and utterly driven to stand up for what they believed in and how they wanted to win. As a mark of their conviction, Clare GAA actually delayed the club championships that autumn till Colin Lynch's suspension ran out so he could play. That winter, Loughnane was summoned again to a meeting of the GAA's Games Administration Committee on foot of a complaint by the Munster Council about his interview on Clare FM that summer. That was followed with a verdict 3 days before Christmas that criticised procedures used by the Munster Council in dealing with the Lynch case and Clare's tactics overall, but it also said that there were, quote, inconsistencies in the manner in which some disciplinary matters have been dealt with by the Munster Council and that Clare may have perceived grievances. That was enough for Loughnane. In Offaly, the mood was now dizzy. The morning after the match in Thurles, Babs Keating, of all people, again summed it up in the Sunday Times. "The first thing I must say," he said, "is that I am delighted for Offaly. I know how hard these players have worked since the start of the year, and yesterday's performance was the reward. For the first time this summer, everything clicked for them, and that was the big difference. All they needed now was to make it all click one last time." Join us next time when we take a detour north to explore the tensions and tragedy that affected the GAA summer in Ulster, in parallel with the rise of one of the greatest minor football teams of all time, seeking a poignant All-Ireland title, and the GAA's own efforts to keep pace with the possibilities for change created by the Good Friday Agreement, and ensure their place in any efforts to develop a new shared community in the North. In the next episode of the Summer of 1998.
The Summer of 98, brought to you by the GAA, is written and produced by me, Michael Foley, and edited by Andrew Foley. You'll find this series on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, and on GAA.ie. And if you like this episode, please do spread the word. Putting these stories together was a lot of fun, and we'd love to share that enjoyment with as many people as possible.